Hello, and welcome to Stories in Harmony. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero, a journalist, marketing strategist, and brand storyteller who helps artists, entrepreneurs, and organizations share their most powerful brand stories. Today, I'm joined by Scott Hamilton Harris. In addition to being an old friend, Scott is an incredible, what they consider a triple threat in the industry of building. He's a builder, an architect, and a designer. He's known for working with a lot of celebrity clients, including Ed Begley Jr., to help his home be eco-friendly. In fact, they created a whole TV show around it. And he is a co-founder of the Building Construction Group. Scott discovered he had a passion for taking things apart and rebuilding them when he was just 5 years old, which he'll tell us about today. He also uses intuition a lot when it comes to not only building, but also when interacting with clients. And I think that that is how he's been successful in winning over a lot of clients, because he very instinctively and intuitively knew what they were looking for. We go into that and a whole lot more. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Scott Harris. Please sit back and here we go. So I'm here with my good friend Scott, who, full disclosure, I haven't seen in a little while, but I'm so excited to catch up with you. And thank you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Is a little while like, was it like 20, 30 years?
It's been a minute. It's been a few while. I know. It's been quite a while. And I have memories of like crazy trips to Palm Springs for friends' 21st birthdays. And
oh, that's right. And you still look the same.
Oh, thank you. So do you.
My hair was just changed a little bit.
Just a little clearer, little bit. But other than that, not at all. Oh. Oh, my gosh. It's so good to see you. And I know that, you know, since we last spoke, you've had an incredible career in building and design and architecture, and you've had so many amazing accomplishments. But I'd love to start, because I thought we could talk a little bit about kind of leaning into your natural gifts and interests and skills and you know, how it can be challenging to do that. Mm. But you seem to have done it from such a young age. You know, I know from our past experiences, but also from doing some research recently, I didn't know that it was as young as 5 years old, you started taking things apart and rebuilding them. Is that right?
It is right. I did. I had a lot of free time on my hands, and I was a single child, only child, and I was very bored. So I always envisioned myself as this scientist or inventor, and had this fantasy of doing it. And I kind of didn't have any money. All the Lego sets were built. So I would look for appliances and things and take them apart and make little Frankenstein things. And I would take a dishwasher apart. I would take the tape recorder. But they had these really cool little motors, these servo motors in there, and wire things up in the room. And that was my pastime as a kid. I just didn't have anything else to play with.
Wow, that's incredible. And were you, did you learn a lot by doing that, I would imagine?
I learned about electricity, which wires not to hold, which ones to hold. it was really cool. Like, I would take things, like, I just had fun taking, like, a motor and running an induction motor through the speaker and then listening to the sounds. And it was really, like, just an exploration. I mean, I wasn't trying to do anything special, but it was fun. It kept me occupied. Kept me out of trouble. We didn't have, you know, Atari back then or Nintendo. There was no internet.
That was a few years later.
It was a few years later. Yeah, we got it at a garage sale, but yeah, I didn't have it.
So. I think that probably served you much better in the long term than playing
video. Then my grandma got me the Mickey Mouse watch, you know, the ones with the hands, the real authentic one. I took that apart. It did not go back together.
Oh,
the
no.
Spring went doink, and then it just, yeah, that never went back.
I'm sorry. Oh, but I bet you learned from that too. And then I was also reading that you would sneak onto building sites when you got a little older to kind of see how things were built and then to come up with ideas for how to do it better.
Yeah, I was, you know, I guess part of the story was I didn't have the best childhood. or what people would deem as a good childhood. And so I had to spend a lot of time in my room, not by choice. And I thought that the reason there was a problem in our house was because the room wasn't, you know, built well enough. And that was my way of processing and dealing with it. My parents would say, stand in the corner. And I'd look at the corner and I'm like, I know I am in the corner because the corner's crooked and that's why they're angry and there's paint drips on here and the molding's not squared up. And, you know, what do you have to focus on when you're staring at the corner of a room for hours every day? And I would just look at the moldings and the ceilings. And I thought, what if all of this were perfect? Maybe my life would be perfect. And so it was just a way of, you know, processing what I was dealing with the pain. So then one day, but I know I was five because I hadn't gone to school yet, I started on the moldings in the room. Let's redo them. Let's try it. I got out of my dad's tools. We started redoing things. And I say we, it was me and my imaginary friend. So, but I would do things. And then my parents actually appreciated it and they were nicer to me. And so I started redoing the house piece by piece. It didn't look good. You know, by the time I was, I think, 16, I'd redone the entire house. And things got a lot better. And so that started me on my journey of, if I can make a home a better place, I can make a family's life a better place. And so I started doing that for people. And also with that idea of how do I make something better, is that just makes me feel more alive. And then I would love to, like, I would climb on the job sites. I would pretend I was sick when they'd go to church. And I'd go to all the job sites and watch. It looks so easy. Like, you'd go by and they're like, there's a hole in the ground. Now they're just pouring concrete. They're putting up some wood. It's so easy. I can do this. So that's my journey. That's how I started on this thing. And let's see, I don't know, maybe 37 years later, I'm still doing it. And I rose to the top of my industry. And there's a lot of accolades, enough where I can't even remember them anymore. So I think it's, I finally did it.
Yeah, Scott. And I think also it's sad, but it is beautiful that I think you wanted to improve, you know, it started with your family experience, but that you wanted to improve people's lives and make them better through design and a lovely living space. And I feel like that's informed the work you've done ever since. I know you've been called an intuitive builder, and you've spoken about how, and I hope I get this quote right, but it's, you know, it's an, where you live can be an expression of your inner soul. And that,
did I say that?
I think you did.
Okay. I like that.
It was quite beautiful. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, is that how you approach working with clients? Or
I do. And I don't do this for me. If I did, I'd be a lot probably more prominent and wealthier. It's really, I'm working through this. It's my own therapy and it's a client's therapy. And, you know, I tell clients we don't charge anything for the construction. We just charge for the therapy. And it really is very therapeutic. You know, it's where we spend 89% of our existence is inside a structure, you know, whether it be a car, whether it be a workplace or at home. But if you can make the home a better place, a place that does soothe your soul, you know, that calms your world around you. It's the place you go when you're sick. It's the place when you want to celebrate. It needs to be that protective layer. And I think it gives us a sense of security, you know, when we can go to that. And it's not that challenging to make it. And so what I like to do with the clients is I do like to connect intuitively with them. And because it's not about like what I want to do, you know, it's about really finding out what they want. And most people don't know what they want and they don't understand. And so the process is to connect with your client and try to pull out of them what they don't even know is in there yet. And that there's a thing I think I've said it before, but it's really cool hearing my voice like this, by the way. I kind of like this.
It sounds really good.
It's really good. But yeah. There's three things that people do that determine how they want to do their homes. It's what they've seen. It's what they've seen in a magazine, or it's how they want to be seen. And they're all inappropriate reasons because none of it really soothes or connects to our soul of what we needed. You know, you may have one client who just was told that medicine cabinets are a bad thing and they don't want them. And I have another one who's like, mom could never afford the medicine cabinet. So, you know, we put them in, and it's that kind of connection that causes people at the end of the project to have this soulful cry that's not joy. It's not happiness. It's not pain. It's just like somebody went inside of me and just pulled out something I didn't even know was there. Wow. And you somehow made it tangible. And you manifested this in a place that I get to stay every day. And they call me, you know, years later, and just while they're having coffee, and like, I can't tell you like how you've changed my life.
That's so beautiful. And how do you help them? How do you help pull that out of people who come to you thinking they want one thing, but then I think you intuit that maybe that isn't what they really want.
You know, it's about, I think we were talking about this before when we were catching up for a few minutes, but it's about being quiet. It's about listening. And I think, you know, like we were talking on the phone before, it's about sitting in the forest and being quiet. And then you hear the birds chirp. Then you hear a little frog that you didn't know there was a frog in there. I didn't know there were frogs in the park. And then you hear the little flitter of wings starting to happen, right? And then there's another little, like, uh-oh, maybe I better get out of here. And so that quietness, and the more you listen to somebody, then you start to hear what it is that their soul is saying. You know, there was, I was doing a project for, I can't remember her name right now, but she was one of Charlie's angels. And she was like, okay, sweetheart, here's what I want. I want this, and I want the ceiling, and I want blah, blah, blah. And she looked at me and she goes, you didn't write anything down. And I said, I know. I don't know if this is going to, oh, Victoria Principal, that's who it was.
Oh, like an early, was she in Charlie's?
I think, I don't know. She did a skin, she did something.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Okay. I work with someone who I forget what they do. I don't care. It's not my thing. But she did do good skincare stuff though, I heard.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She did that big infomercial. But anyway, so I said to her, I heard everything you said, but there's a different layer. But what you didn't realize that when you were talking, you actually dropped your guard. And when you're talking, I could hear something in your heart and your soul was finally opening up, and I could hear what you really wanted. And everything that you wanted was nothing that you told me. That I remembered. I can repeat everything that you just said, but my job is to give you what your soul wants, not what you're telling me. And then she said, this is kind of hot. Wow, I've never had a man speak to me like this before. And so, you know, you become good friends with your clients that way. You gain trust with them that way. And it's a very different process. You know, we don't just build widgets. We build, you know, someone's haven.
Yeah, it's so true. I've just bought my first home and, you know, not quite in the place where we're able to renovate the way we might like, but even just little things of like where to place, you know, bookshelves or candles or plants. It just kind of brings it to life and makes it feel more like you. And a lot of us these days spend a lot of time working from home in addition to living and sleeping in our houses. And so that, have you, this is going off on a tangent a bit, but found that that's been a consideration in recent build of yours, that people are like spending more time working from home and need maybe some different things from it? Or now that we're, I wouldn't say post-pandemic because at the moment cases are surging again, but, you know, people really wanted outdoor spaces and sanctuaries to be able to relax in rather than going out as much. Has that changed the way you're doing things?
I would say that people, I mean, the market that I'm working in, we're building these mansions for people that are like their castles. It's their monument to their life. And so they normally put all of these things in there, you know, their spas, their massage rooms, they've got their like, their place where they get their hair cut. So they have that. But I guess in my industry, I do see And I've done a lot of writing about it, so that was kind of fun to write about it. But it's really about being able to do a home office for people now. And I think one of the things that's important, a good message for your listeners is, and I don't know if you're working from home, is it's about separating office and home. You know, a lot of people are now working from home, but it's what's nice about working in the office is that you could leave it. And sometimes, you know, when you have the home office two combined, you're looking over and you're like, I didn't get that done. I have to get that done. And so it's better to separate them. That's one thing. You know, but I think there's a lot more interest in home because people are spending a lot more time in home now.
Yeah.
But it's become a focal point, right? For all of us.
Yeah,
it's,
definitely. Even in a bustling city like LA, where everyone was all, it seemed that everyone was always going out. Now it's a lot more about staying home and being cozy, I think.
And healthy. Because a lot of the homes that, you know, one of my biggest concerns is the way homes are built. And a lot of the materials that they're using are not healthy. You know, the off-gassing, the VOCs, the high VOCs that are in materials, and something that there's a lot of mold that's, you know, just things that are seeping in your walls that are coming out. And so one of the things that's also important is making a home healthy. Because if you're not healthy, you're not going to be happy. It's not a haven. And a lot of times, where do you go when you're not healthy? You go to your house. What if your health isn't making you healthy? And it's actually the thing that's giving you that, oh, I can't, I don't know what's wrong, you know. And it's actually because there was something behind your bed and the walls that's causing it. So those are like important things that I guess through the years that I try to put in for our clients.
Oh, that's so important. And it can be very scary if you're not aware that that might be a cause of problems. And Scott, I know one of the things that you've done, I think that, you know, you're very well known for is eco-friendly designs and your work with Ed Begley Jr., which I know you've been asked about a lot, but some of I'm sorry to bring it
up
again.
I got typecast, yes.
Yeah, but what you're doing, I don't know, in terms of solutions and sustainability to preserve our planet and to, you know, the things that could be scalable, not just for one celebrity's home, but could be used in businesses and commercial building. I feel like there's so much potential there.
There is so much potential. Yeah. And it is a side project that I've been working on is in development of new materials for the industry. It's ironic. It's like one of the things that has never changed. It's like, you know, building a home is kind of like grandma's old Chevy or Pontiac. It's still the same. You know, we thought we were modernized by changing paint colors, right? And we have a little iPad on the wall, or we have these wireless devices and hubs, and we think we're technologically advanced. And the reality is, like, I put 7,248 feet of wiring in the last home to make it wireless. That just doesn't seem very intuitive to me.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And so, and one of my neighbors, they're building a new house, like in LA, everybody's allowed to do an ADU, an accessory dwelling unit, so they can make their backyard like an apartment building there. And you're watching it. It's like, I was telling people, it's like, but you see it, it's we're building with sticks. Then you take sticks and you put mud on the outside, which is called stucco. And you wrap the house in paper and it's all biodegradable. And so all of these products they're taking from the earth's resources, they're all breaking down. They're not recyclable the way that we're doing them. And there's a lot easier ways to build for people. I mean, and the reason I believe that we haven't really had an evolution in homes or construction really for residential is because you don't have the timeline on how long a home lasts is, well, it's usually the length of your mortgage, but by the time you build a new home, the evolution of it, like we always do something better, right? We learn from our mistakes, we do it better. And something like your phone, every year and every 6 months, they got to come out with a new one. So it forces people to come out with a newer version every time, right? The TVs. And so, you know, it wasn't when you had the old like Bell telephones with a dial on it, they never really evolved. It was the evolution slowed down. It went exponential once we started going digital. And once the if you can do the same thing for homes and move them into a market, same thing for cars. You know, now that you have your car for 3 years, everyone's got to come out with the newest, coolest thing. And so that didn't happen with homes because the homes are sitting there. So you're having like a 50-year life cycle on these things, 100-year life cycle, like your home. It's like, how old is your home?
100 years old.
Yeah. And do you think the builder's still alive?
I doubt it.
I mean, maybe.
I would think not. Not that I would hope, but
you know, he'd probably come back and look at this and like, hey, my next home's going to be this. But, you know, it's not, the cycle of it does that. And so we kind of got lost in it. You know, it's like homes and construction were like the stepchild that just didn't evolve the way, you know, when I was a kid and you had the old like black and white console TV and I played Pong, you know, the home was built the same way then as they are built now.
Do you think, Scott, that like what can be done to improve that from a sustainability point in your eyes? I know it's a huge question, but is there a way to kind of bring the building industry into the future and like maybe an easy way for people? I know it's in more people's consciousness now than it was even 10 years ago, which is definitely a good thing, but it feels like there's still so far to go. Are there things that you do, I guess, beyond educating your own clients and your team at your company? Are there other grander steps that can be taken to help us be more sustainable in our building?
Yes.
What would that look like?
You know, when you look at the way things are built nowadays, everything's modular. And it's easy to replace them, like computers, right? They just have boards. You can replace out the parts. And everything's being made to be recyclable. So there's ways to build the walls and sections and modular sections that are recyclable. You know, so if you have your home becoming a modular thing that clicks and connects like Lego blocks made in panels that are easily melted down, like your car, there's not a lot of guilt. You know, when you turn your car in, they just crush it, push it, melt it down, and then they remake it again. I got to go to the Kohler factory that makes all of the Kohler, you know, plumbing fixtures in Kohler, Wisconsin. That was really cool. Oh, wow. They actually have their own city. And you're just looking at all this steel that they have that they're making everything out of. And there's like a big magnet and it's picking it up and dropping it in the kiln, you know, and they're using solar power to melt everything down too, to offset their electrical. And they're basically just re-putting it, repurposing it, and then reusing it. And they have sand molds that are made. The sand gets broken down. So you can do the same thing if you use materials in the home that you can break down and then reuse. And then therein starts the whole evolution of home construction. And it changes it forever.
That's so interesting. I know there are probably a million things like that. But I guess, I don't know, that would be probably a whole podcast episode in and of itself. So I wanted to kind of bring back how you've used intuition in what you do, and also how I feel like following that calling, what you love to do, something you've been passionate about since you were little, has created many beautiful synchronicities and this wonderful career that you've had. I'm sure there have been challenges too, and I will ask you about those as well. But you were telling me the other day about a synchronicity that was a wrong number. Like someone called looking for a different Scott Harris, and it ended up being a multi-million dollar client. Could you share that story?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, so it was Neil Patrick Harris, who apparently was selling his house. And he gave the new owner my phone number, and they called me. I didn't know Neil Patrick Harris. We used to watch Doogie Howser though a lot.
Yeah.
Kind of knew him. But I get a call, and they said, Neil Patrick Harris said, you're the best. We want to use you. And I said, great. You know, so you go for the interview. You're scratching your head. You're like, I don't know. Do I tell him? I really don't know him. And I get down there, and I realized that once I started talking to them, they said, Neil said he's worked with you for years. And you're like, okay. I just thought maybe the guy knew me and was recommending me. I thought I got to that level that like actors are really just know me that well. And then, so I said, I got to be honest with you. It's not me. I don't know who you were trying to call. I think it's a different Scott Harris. And they're like, you know, we got the wrong guy. And I said, you know, that's okay. And they ended up selling, that house and ended up buying Patrick Swayze's home years later. And I get an email. And of all things, talk about intuition. I never check the spam folder. Do you? Like,
I do now. I didn't used to, but now I'm finding a lot in there that shouldn't be in there.
Yeah, so it's like every 3 years you're sitting like, oh, I just wonder if Viagra, Russian women, you know, all this stuff that you're seeing that's inappropriate. And I'm like, see the name. I'm like, I know that name. It sounds real. And then he said, hey, we just bought a new house. And by that time he had really, I don't want to identify, but, you know, just rose to the top of his industry. And we ended up doing an $8 million project. And they said, you know, the connection that we had during that short time, even though it wasn't you, was made us never forget you. And so they said, well, the real Scott Harris, please stand up. And they said, we used him. He did a bathroom remodel. Nice guy. But like, we want there was something about you. There was an energy that we felt. Like, I felt like you were connecting with us or you understood us. And it meant a lot to me that someone got me forgetting them too, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought like we get you and I get you kind of thing. And so it was a big, beautiful project. And almost all the projects that I've ever gotten were just somehow that way. It's like people say, how do you get these? And I ended up doing the Playboy Mansion. And it was something that manifested that I believe I manifested because we were having a company holiday dinner and I'm with my partner and we're all of a team. And I said, I want to do the mansion. You know, it's just like, I've already done the eco house. I want to do the sexy, the green, the all of them. I wanted to like hit, I want the White House too. The politics, I want to hit them all. And I said, 1 year from this day, I am going to be doing the Playboy Mansion. And they said, cut him off. He's had too much to drink. And I said, somebody get a post-it note, write this note down. This is when I'm going to do it. I just made that statement. I'm going to make it happen. I did kind of wonder if I had too much to drink that night. And I completely forgot about it. And so some bizarre circumstances of somebody who owned the girls next door house was a client and a next door thing. And like, I went, hey, why don't you check out the mansion? And just the most bizarre set of circumstances happened. And on that date was the date that I signed the contract to start the restoration.
A year from the date.
And I actually forgot about it.
Oh my gosh.
I never thought about it again after I wrote it down. And I called my team. I'm like, do you have that note? What was that date? It's today. And so I put it on their desk. I said, just want to let you know, I didn't drink too much that night.
Wow, Scott, that's some pretty powerful manifesting.
I was like, I should do that stuff again. I got to write more stuff down. So, you know, and I'm not saying it's in a way to an ego, but it was just, it's something that we all have, right? Yeah. You know, that's the power of writing things down, the power of thought, the power of prayer, you know, the power of community and the power of talking to people and like what we're doing right here now. And there's a lot more that's happening than just the talking, because you're also, just like when I was talking with Victoria Principal, she was talking, but she didn't realize she had opened up a whole other channel of hearing to somebody. So like when you and I are talking, we're opening up channels to many other people that can hear this thing on a different level beyond, you know, these beautiful microphones and setup you have here. And so that is something that took a long time to understand. And with that, you also have to be very careful with it, because if you're thinking of things that are inappropriate, you know, that is possible to make that happen and you have consequences of that. So the thought and the words are very powerful.
Yeah, Scott, that's really interesting. And I do firmly believe that. And, you know, it's interesting too, as somebody who has a tendency to worry and to kind of have anxiety about things that might not go right in the future, I'd really try to catch myself. And it's been a pattern for much of my life. And I believe that the strong kind of loving thoughts and energy are more powerful than those worried, maybe lower vibration.
They have a higher vibration.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it definitely takes some rewiring. It's not an automatic thing. And I think I'm probably not alone in that. I'm not alone in that. I might, you know, have a higher propensity than some others, but I wonder, are there times when you find yourself worrying that things won't work out, or are you pretty, you know, pretty confident, or how do you deal with that?
It's a fight every day, you know, it's a battle. And it's something that you wake up with and you have to tell yourself, because we are designed to make all of our decisions based on fear. That's how we operate, because that's a self-protection mechanism. Because we always have to look out, you know, evolutionarily, you're probably, is that a word, evolutionarily?
It should be.
It should be. If it's not, I'm going to make it, we'll change it. But through our evolution, you know, you had to be concerned about it. You couldn't be out there living in the fields like, eh, maybe there's a bear, I don't know. Eh, don't worry about it. I'm going to be positive today. It won't eat me. You know, you had to be fear-based. And so we evolved, I believe, and every action is about is fear-based, which is about self-protection. And if you operate from that place, you're never moving yourself forward, right? Because it's all about fear and self-protection.
Right.
And so I have to fight with myself to remove the fear and say, is this an action that's based on fear, or is this an action based on love, on something, on moving something forward? And I have to, you know, separate the two. And it takes time. It's a reprogramming. It's not natural. But I think it can be evolutionarily way to expand who we are. And I think, you know, and something that I really welcome is these clients that I've met. They do think that way. They're very different. And
so they think in more like loving, positive ways, or
I wouldn't say all of them, but okay. You know, I would say it's interesting because you meet a lot of clients, and I've done so many projects, but a lot of the clients that I've met are that they're the biggest and tops of their industry. They do operate that way, and that's one of the times I think we connect with them, and they're like, "You get me, I get you. I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing," and it's very interesting because they learned that. And I think a lot of times these people are some of the, that are, you know, considered the one percenters. There's something very unique that they're doing.
What is it, if you had to break it down?
I think that they're working on things in a manifesting, you can call it an energy level. I mean, they're working, I don't know how to explain it. And it's the thing that can't be explained, because I think it happens on a different plane. And you know, we have our logic centers, but it's just like, you know, your olfactory nerves. When you smell something, it triggers memory, but you can't describe it because it's not connected to logic. So it's something that we feel, and it's something, so I long explanation why I can't explain it, but it's a thing of knowing. And it's a way that they visualize things, or they pull the energy and make things happen. I mean, I call it just rainmaking. And it's a whole other avenue of things. It's not about how well you do your job anymore. It's about how well you can make the rain and how you can reach out to the masses and how you can make things happen. It's not an accident that these people become famous or successful or at the tops of their field. I have a client right now who said, "You have to get this house completed." It's the one I just came from. Oh. And I need everything signed off. It's going to happen. And if anybody says no, you know, you're out. Really, and I'm thinking, there's no way it's going to happen. Everybody think yes, 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 yes. And so we did, you know, let's just go. She's our client. Let's be respectful. They're our clients. And the most fascinating things that happened, that we're all just high-fiving going, that doesn't seem real. But, you know, what we didn't seem as real is understanding that the thought, the power of thought made it real, and not being in a fear-based thought process and visualizing what you want. You know, like 3 months ago, I have a note here about doing a podcast with Laura. And this is, I'm just joking. It'd just be fun. But it's visualizing those things. And when you put your energy to it, it's amazing what happens. And that's what they are doing, you know. And it's great because you have a few moments with them. It's these amazing people. And they're like, "Are you?" They're like, "Yeah, I do that." I'm like, "I knew you did that."
I've seen that with some of my clients too, something similar. You know, people who are very successful in their fields, from entertainment to investing. And it's a similar energy. And I haven't, you know, the work we've done together has been more storytelling and writing based, but, and I did to some extent pick their brain about their mindset, but not to the degree that I would like to. And I just find that so fascinating.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know if have you ever interviewed somebody or in the music industry where you listen to their music, maybe just analytically and went, I mean, it's good. It's pretty good. But you're like, oh my God, I love them. They're just so cool. I don't know what it is. I have to be in their presence. They're just amazing. But like, yeah, they're just playing, they're strumming on a guitar. It's not just strumming on the car. It's not just this, their voice. There's some other presence that they're putting out there that's everyone else's present and they want a part of it. And then what happens is there's like one law in the universe that everything is trying to reach a state of equilibrium and balance. And so when you have somebody that's at that level of vibration, they attract everybody to them because everybody wants to hit that level. And so once you rise yourself above that vibration level, all the other people want to rise to it. And so then therefore you have what they call charisma. I don't know. I just want to be in your presence. I just like you. You know, it's not about what you do anymore. It's about what you're doing on a different level that we don't talk about or people don't talk about openly, you know?
Yeah, it is so magnetic and there's a calming presence that they have too. I find, I mean, depending on who they are, but I think that that draws people into kind of a calm assuredness, I would say. And I mean, it's different for every person, but that's something, you know, I think people gravitate towards people that make them feel good about themselves mm-hmm. and make them feel calm. And that seems to be a gift that a lot of the people I've met have had.
And I think when we say calm, what we're saying is we feel safe too.
Safe, yeah, safe, right? At peace.
We feel safe, at peace. We don't feel threatened. We feel like we're in a safe environment because this person can or this environment can protect us. And I think there's a lot of primitive things that are happening, you know, somewhere back in our brain that we don't understand. And, you know, to not identify and openly speak about these types of things it's still fascinating. I mean, it's in all of our culture. It's been out there, but it's not openly discussed. You know, Star Wars, it's the Force be with you.
Yeah.
You know, what is the Force? And Darth Vader with his hand and, you know, the preachers that lay their hands on and the white auras and all of these, it's, you know, you have it through all through a culture and movies and bad energy and, oh, my dog doesn't like you. He just knows. But why don't we talk about it for humans? It's something that it's just only exist superficially amongst everything around us. But yet for us, we don't believe that it actually exists. And that's where it exists more. And that therein lies, you know, the difference between those few people in our population that know it exists.
One of the, I belong to sort of a meditation spiritual group, and the woman that leads it, her name is Julie Pyatt, and she talks a lot about cultivating a Jedi's mindset
uh-huh.
so that when something happens that your personality level really doesn't want to be happening, maybe your car is being repossessed or, you know, something, a car accident, something terrible. You know, the faster you can adopt a Jedi mindset and come back to sort of a calm neutrality, the less likely it will be to have really negative repercussions that ripple out because you found your center again.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. And that's something that I've been trying to master or at least become proficient at. And certainly I'm better at it some days than others, but I find even if it's just your own emotional state, you know, that's powerful too. And finding more calm and joy on any given day, even if you've got, you know, some perceived tragedy or maybe not a tragedy, but, you know, an inconvenience like a fender bender, you might let that ruin your whole month having to deal with that. Or you could be like, okay, nobody was hurt. We'll call the repair shop and our insurance and we'll get it dealt with and it's not a big thing.
But what if everything that happened in our life was a positive event and yet we didn't recognize it because we were too based in what could go wrong because we are still in that primitive mindset?
Right.
You know, and what if that fender bender that somebody got in was something that stopped you from getting into a very serious accident up ahead? What if there was some energy that says, stop, Laura, we're going to stop her right here. She get the car fixed. It's okay. We just saved her life on what was just about to happen. You know, and so there is a lot of that that happens that we fail to recognize. And I think everything that happens is a gift. But sometimes we see it as a negative and we go back the other way because we get lost in that thought of logic.
Yeah, it's especially I think in Western culture, modern Western culture, that's what we're taught most of our lives. And it's definitely a kind of a relearning or rewiring process. And I've been so fascinated by all of that, but it's certainly nothing that I was taught by my family or by my schools. This is all kind of reading books and talking to friends and seeking out mentors and that sort of thing. And
I just best advice for you is like this message that comes over strongly to me is that you need to accept you and whatever you did is your best and your best is great. And just say that.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
Because yeah. It really is. I mean, what you've done with your life. I mean, the fact that I get to sit here with you today. I mean, this beautiful podcast and everything that you're doing and way you've evolved. I mean, we knew each other when we were young, right? Or much young. We're still young.
But, we're still young.
I mean, to see where you've come from, you know. And I think it's something to be celebrated. And I wouldn't be surprised if you wake up though, like still questioning it, you know, did I do enough? Could I have done more? And I think that's the kind of thing that takes your energy back the wrong way instead of pushing you forward when you could. You know, I was, I think you know that I also have a sensitivity where I can feel people's energy without touching them or move it. And I don't know how I do it, but I can do it.
Yes, you did a demonstration for me years ago.
Yeah. And so that's what actually started it for me is that I could actually tangibly feel it. And I was started becoming aware of people's energy going up and people's energy going down. And I was telling somebody who was this, he was an engineer. He actually got a patent for the world's first hydrogen engine that he created.
Wow.
Until BMW finally took it over when it expired. And I told him, he's like, that's not impossible. No, it can't happen. There's no such thing. And I said, and he had an electrical voltometer. And I said, give me that. We're at a party, right? And there was one person there at the party, Laura, that I was like, oh, God, she's here. I just like, and you're like getting chips. Oh, shoot, she's by the chips now. Go get a drink. Just like, I didn't like the feeling, you know? I was just couldn't stand it. I didn't know why. And I'm sitting there and I'm showing him and I held the two ends of the voltometer and I didn't realize it, but I could make it go up or down depending on, you know, what I was thinking.
Wow.
And I was like, and he's like, no, it's like, try it up, get 10. All right, negative. And so I realized because I could pull or push the energy out and either absorb it or push it. And what was interesting, I thought it was really cool that I could show him. He said, I was like, I told you, dude, I told you. You know, why do I care? But then guess what happens? That girl by the chip sits next to me, right? And she's like, what are you doing? And the energy thing went zoop. Like all the way down. I'm like, uh-oh, hold on, party trick failure. Wait, let me try this. And she's like, see, it doesn't work. And then she gets up, and it went back up again. Oh, and like, goodness. I never would have experienced that. I'm like, oh my God, I realize that they call them energy vampires and there's people around you. They're not pushing your vibe up. They're actually bringing you down and they're drawing it from you. And I became aware that, like, when I feel that feeling, I need to move myself away from those people because they're draining me.
Yeah, Scott, I think you talked a little bit earlier about getting quiet, and I think so many of us are rushing around so much or stuck in our own worried thoughts that we're not paying attention. But I notice even, you know, online at the grocery store or something, there might be someone I don't know who comes in front of me, and I notice them, and I just think, I feel like they don't seem like they're a very happy person. And then sure enough, when they go to check out, they'll be arguing with the person at the register and they'll be cursing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I felt it before they said a word. It's so interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, just like opposite energies attract, so the same. It's a weird phenomenon. So, because it's just, it's still a balance or an attraction. And I've noticed there's days where I'm like bitter. I'm just upset. I had a bad day. And you know what? Someone starts being mean to me and they're honking at me. And there's some weird person who comes up to me and is mean. And it's like all these bad things. And it just, it's almost like I believe I'm walking around with this, you know, hey, come over here. I got your energy. I'm feeling like it. And you attract those people or that energy from those people. And then there's days where you feel great and it's just like, is that your natural hair? Yeah, you know, it's like, can I buy you a coffee? You know, and it's like all these great things just start happening for you. So being in touch with that is a really powerful thing. And it's just bizarre that we don't talk about it. You know, they don't have the Dr. Phil show with that. I mean, it's, I don't know why.
It's still considered a little airy fairy, but I think it's so real. And you're right, there aren't too many. I mean, in some circles I've been operating in lately, it's discussed more, but, and I'm thankful because I find it so fascinating, but in polite, common conversation, not really at all.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's just, it's seen, you know, as witchcraft in like our country. And I think it's more accepted. I learned something really cool, by the way. I was doing homework with my son, and I kind of like, I may be going off on a tangent, but not really. Do you know where the word New England came from?
No.
It's really cool.
Is this like your Van Nuys joke?
It's not like Van Nuys. No. Okay. Van Nuys. No. It's not that joke. This is real. But so one of the kings in England decided to change their religion. And so a group of people decided to leave and come to the New World here in America. Columbus, there's a cool place over there. And they called it their New England. And the Puritans, because they wanted to purify their religion, and the separatists and all of those people. So it was very interesting, but that they came here, what started our origins was people who wanted to purify their religious beliefs. And in those religious beliefs, they don't have room for what we're talking about, because the only energy that you can have comes from God Almighty or Jesus Christ. And if you have energy or this kind of thing, then you're part of Satan. I mean, that's when the witch burnings were happening. You know, that's when, and so I just thought it was interesting that our entire, you know, America that we lived our lives in started with New England, with people saying, I want to be the purest of purest, which is knocking out, you know, our ancestors and the people that started here were the ones that knocked out, wanted to erase that history of that. So we that's where we came from. And I almost think, you know, it's so wonderful that how people's sexuality is now something on the forefront where like everybody can talk about it and express, you know, like my son told me that he's going to identify as a marshmallow now.
Oh,
I'm not really sure what that means. You know, it's not a he or her, it's a marshmallow. I think he was being funny, but it's so accepted now to bring those things out, which is basically, it's just one of the facets of who we are as a person. And our energy is another facet, you know, and it's, I think, even a bigger facet, and we're not allowed to speak about it. There's oppression that exists. And, you know, I was one of my best friends when I told him about this, what I was able to experience, which I shared with you when I was younger. He asked me to come downstairs. He wanted to take me to dinner. There was six people in the van. They locked the door and they wanted to do an exorcist on me. He's
really?
Like, he said, we're getting the devil out because you, if this thing that you have inside you where you're moving energy around, it's either from God, because you don't believe in God, that means it's from the devil. So we need to get it out. I'm like, can I get out of the car now, guys?
This
is really weird. He apologized now. We're really still best friends. But it's not allowed to be talked about openly, but it's done quietly.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. It should just be like, you know, just the way we're becoming more comfortable with ourselves and the sexuality, and everyone's allowed to come out. People should be able to come out and talk about this as well.
Yeah. And I think, it might just be kind of an LA bubble that, you get caught up in after living here for a long time. And so many of my friends are in music and entertainment. And so I feel like they're you know, it's a little more accepted in those circles to talk about those things. So I've gotten more used to it and comfortable with it. But going back to see family on the East Coast or
where the New England started,
right? Yeah. It would be like, ooh, what are you talking about? I don't know if, you know, if there's a fear there, if it's just a very foreign concept, or maybe it's just something they'd rather not discuss. But yeah,
it's I think it's all of the above. We fear, you know, we're fear-based people. If we don't understand it, it must be bad. And so we have to, you know, push it down, right? And if it's not explainable or tangible, then, and you can't read about it in a book, then it must be something bad. And a lot of us grew up with generations, you know, probably it wasn't too many generations ago where there was talked about the devil and witchcraft. And so it's unfortunate, and it did stop our evolution. And, you know, I feel like what we're doing right now, we are really the pioneers in the new America here that's starting these things, these conversations happening. They happen, but, you know, it takes some guts for a general contractor who's building these homes to come out and just openly talk about it. And people in my industry, we heard what you said, you know, but it's okay because I think we need to be pioneers. We all do it. Everybody knows about it. Just nobody wants to talk about it.
And Scott, I think that, you know, conversely, that's helped you get a lot of clients. Maybe they weren't even aware that that's what was happening, but the story you just shared about, you know, you being the real Scott Harris, that they remembered your energy years later and got back in touch, and you got an even bigger job. I mean, that I think is you doing some of this, whether or not they were consciously aware of it. And I feel like that's happened before. You told me a story about bringing someone berries out of the blue, a potential client you were trying to woo, or not even trying to woo, but you know, they were considering working with you, and you just had this intuition to bring them berries, right?
Yeah. I was driving through the valley here, and thankfully they live near the valley too. And there was like a little farm that's just like on the side of the freeway, and I just like, I've learned to listen to what my thoughts are, even if they don't make sense, because they're usually nice to me or nice to others. And something said, you got to get off and go get some berries for them. Like, that's the weirdest thing I ever heard. I'm supposed to get off the freeway, go get some berries, and bring it to my client's house that I just met 2 days ago. That seems, I would like seeing stalker, weirdo. Nope, Scott, you got to do it. So I went and did it, listened to my higher self, knocked at their door. It was actually gate, and got through the security and everybody. And I said, I don't know why, but I just had to bring you these raspberries. And she's like, oh my God, Scott, we had the biggest argument. My daughter wanted them. I couldn't get them. We had the biggest fight in this house, and she's been crying all morning. And our entire morning was ruined because somehow we couldn't get the raspberries. How did you know to just walk in my door with raspberries? I'm kind of freaked out a little bit. Did you travel? And I said, I don't know. Just something said to me that I needed to get you raspberries. And she's like, well, something says I need to sign your contract today and have you do our house. And, you know, millions of dollars later and lots of work. I didn't mean millions that I made, but it was just, I mean, some of the most beautiful work I'd ever done. Wow. It was just so fun. We would just like, it was like creating stuff in some hyper creative zone. Like, can we do purple mirrors today? Purple mirrors. Yeah, we can do purple. Let me figure that out. Can we make like the clouds just come out of the floor? Yeah, let's do that. It was so fun. Oh my God. So
that's amazing.
Most every job I've ever had has never come through standard advertising. It's come by listening to people, being the best I can to them. And I think, you know, like energies do attract. And I think they feel that, and, you know, we usually have a conversation about it, and they're like, are you? Yeah, you know, we can't talk about it. But I think it needs to be talked about openly here. And I think, like, what we're doing right now, we're making a change for the better. And I'll tell you something that really helped me, if it helps you and people listening, is the way to get in touch with this. I read this in a book, I think, when I was 16, is whenever you get that feeling that you know something is to not use the words "that's weird" when it happens. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to call Scott, right? And that's so weird. He just called me like before I called him. And that's, you know, we all say "that's so weird." And when you say "that's so weird," you're shutting it down in your head. Okay, that's weird. Oh, that's, yeah. You shut it off
that's
at that
moment.
That's
powerful language.
Yeah, it's yeah. powerful language that you go through. It's like snapping the rubber band. That's weird. Don't think that way. Mm-hmm. And so if you start to remove the word "that's weird" and you say, what were the things that happened that led up to that? And you examine it and then you teach yourself a whole new language. What happened before I said, "I'm going to call Scott"? Well, first I thought of him. Then I remembered his face. Then I remembered back when, and then he called. And so you notice, you record that. And then next time, you're like, I'm thinking of their face. I remember it was Rachel, like, and then we did. I went to a party, and then she calls. Aha. And so next time it happens, you have a friend. You remember their face? You remember what he did? I think someone's about to call right now. And it's not going to be weird. And they do. And so therefore, yeah. therein lies how you learn an entire new language that's not through vocabulary. It's through a series of sequences that happen that lead up to something. And you have to memorize those sequences and stop saying it's weird. And therein lies how you start to expand your awareness.
Yeah. And I feel like those synchronicities are also signs, clues along the path that you're kind of, not to be too cliche, but living out your higher purpose. Like when you're not getting in your way, like you were saying to me before, and you're right that I often worry I'm not doing enough, or, you know, kind of expending my energy, beating myself up for not doing better. Rather than doing that, if we focus more on, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought for a moment, but just the synchronicities that are happening, they are little clues that we're following the path that we're meant to follow, I believe. And,
yes.
you know, doors start to open up when you can get out of that lower energy of worry and fear, and can trust more and be more at peace no matter what's happening around you. That's when the doors just start to open up almost magically. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and if we stop, and magic sounds like a good word, but if we say it's naturally instead of magically, it makes it more more normal, right?
True.
We can normalize it. And, you know, it's interesting because there is a lot of collective energy and spirits, and I think, you know, ultimately everything wants to be the best. And so those messages that you're talking about, what I think is interesting, because I get them all the time, but they can't make something happen. They can't control you. We all have our own personal spirit, and we can do with it as we please. So what you get is you're never going to have something happen, but you're going to get a hint, and it's going to be a little drop, you know, and if you're not hearing that, it's going to be a bigger drop. And then eventually you get an anvil in the head. Oh, geez, that really hurt. Like, at what point are you going to get the message that you're there, or this is the direction to go? So you're going to get this happening, right? But you're never going to get someone that's going to take you. The energies will never do that because you are allowed to have your own spirit. And so being open to seeing those little markers pop up, aha, it's like the little popcorn that somebody was dropping, and you can follow the trail the right way.
Popcorn trail. And,
yeah.
you know, even if you do go off in a different direction and maybe you don't trust your intuition about something, then you learn from that. And then, you know, it ultimately that might be to end following those breadcrumbs too, even if it looks like it's going in a really weird direction. You're like, I'm a builder. Why am I talking about, you know, this, or why am I writing about food, which is another thing that I know you do. And they're like, oh, but by writing about food, I met this amazing person that led me to this, and, you know, or just had a wonderful meal that made everything so much better. You know, whatever the case may be, it might not be obvious. And if we're talking about professionally, it might not appear to be in line with your professional path or what you had envisioned for yourself. But if you have a strong ping or hit of intuition, I feel like it's so worth exploring if it feels good.
If it feels right. And it's usually, you know, things are 3 to 5 steps removed. It's not obvious. You know, it's, I guess if I was a church, I would say you have to develop your faith. But, you know, for whatever reason, you can't usually move from A to B, you know, just by opening the door and walking through. You've got to take a few steps to get there. Like when I'm traveling somewhere, I've got to go through a lot of cities before I arrive. And things don't make sense, but if you follow them, you know, you end up, like, it's interesting how one of the ways that I became a writer for like 8 magazines now, I was sitting at a bar and I just saw these people sitting next to me with a magazine, and I just, I'm going to sit next to you. I don't know why. Hi. I'm like, you like magazines? They're like, actually, we're a magazine editor. And this is the owner of the magazine. Oh, they showed me their magazine. He was ordering steak. He's like, you like steak? I'm like, yeah, but they don't know how to make your steak. We strike up a conversation about how to make the best steak. He's like, get out of here. He said, I'll tell you what. If you can make a steak as good as you speak about how you do, I'm going to put you in my magazine. And so I went to his house. We actually filmed the whole episode, made the steak, ended up putting me on the cover of his magazine as the constructional chef. I was above the Four Seasons chef interview, which I was like, oh, that's just not cool, you know, and did a whole sentence like layout. Then he liked some of the things I said, asked me to write some few paragraphs. Before I know it, I'm getting offers, and now I'm right for 8 national magazines. I could write for more, and I've got articles I got to do tonight. But and, you know, all of that came from just that moment of, I'm going to sit next to this guy who's got a magazine, and I don't know why, and say, I like your magazines you're sitting next to.
That's amazing, Scott. I did wonder how you began writing. I didn't realize that it was that sort of a lovely synchronicity that went to it. And just to share one of mine, since we're talking about magazines, I had applied for a job at a British music magazine that I loved growing up, and kind of on a whim thinking, oh, you know, I'm sure they'll have millions of applicants. It will never lead anywhere. But I guess I didn't tell myself that, but I just thought, well, the odds aren't great. So I did some writing tests, put my best foot forward. They invited me for an interview, but it was in New York, and they weren't offering to pay for the flight there. And I had work. I was busy at my job at that point. I was like, should I do this? Is it even worth it? And I got into my car with all of these thoughts swirling in my head. And the first song that came on was a song called New York by Doves. And it's a song that I love. And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, yes, I'm going. Like right then, that made the decision for me. I tend to get a lot of signs through music, so it's a little different.
Yes.
But it's something I've learned to trust. And if I'm quiet enough and open enough to it, I can hear those messages.
When you were talking, I was just going to ask you a question to be left with, is what is this affinity that you have with music? And that is your connection, you know, and whether you're writing about it, whether you're playing it, whether you're interviewing people that are around it, you have this affinity to music and connection. And what music is a language of vibrations, right? And it's a source of energy. It technically is. It's being pushed, you know, it can go through the air. It's funny how, like, we don't think it's magical that I can sit in the house and wirelessly, you know, hear something and you can transmit that energy over the air. But somehow the fact that I can't transmit it to you is like, oh, that's, we don't talk about that.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
But you are so connected to the music, and I think the music is the vehicle that transports that energy, and you've learned how to read that energy from the music.
Well, that's good. I hadn't articulated it, and I did wonder, because my family, it's pretty unique to me. Like, my dad enjoys listening to the Beatles and that sort of thing, but it was never a passion of anybody's in my family. And I, from the time I was 11, was like obsessed. I just lived for music, and that's always been a part of me. And I was, you know, even though I'm a writer, it's hard to articulate why that is. It's just been like breathing for me. It just seemed to be wired into who I am. But that is a wonderful explanation.
I don't know if I'm right. It just
I love that though.
I mean, I could be totally wrong, but it's
I think it's a part of it.
Yeah. I was just getting that kind of message though when you started before you started talking about music, that that's your vocabulary and that energy, and that's something that you read, and you need to be connected to that.
Wow, Scott, that's so interesting. And I've always, it's funny because I'm a writer and I love words. I appreciate them so much and language. But the way I connect with music and songs is not through the lyrics first. Like that seems to be right. Like tertiary. It's like the feeling that.
The feeling that comes across through the music that's transported. Yeah. And the music is the vehicle
right.
of it.
Yeah.
It's yeah. And that's amazing. And like we were talking about, somebody can have music that you're like, I don't get why you just keep singing. It's like doing the C, the G, the C, the G, and an E chord, right? But I don't know. I need it. It's because they put something else on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's crack. It's crack. That's what it is. It's energy crack, you know, and that's what you're attracted to. So you're very in tune with it. You're using it like since you were 11, probably before. And I think, you know, it would be special for you to like, when you can have that awareness of what's happening, is to say that, God, that's how I hear things. Like I hear things through homes. You know, that's my connection is through homes and people and structures. And that's where I hear things. But you're hearing it there. And to say like, that's what I hear. And then it allows you to like, what do I feel when I listen to this music? And what am I, it's not about the music. It's a feeling. And what is it that person? And I think that's why you're such a great writer, because while they're transmitting their music to you, they're putting the feeling, and you can feel what it is that they're trying to sell or say that maybe never made it to the lyrics because they weren't the best lyricist, or maybe didn't really make it to their chord progressions, but they were saying something. You can listen to the music. You can take another level of it, write it, and transpose it yourself into words. And that's where I think your genius is.
Thanks. It's so interesting, Scott, that you say that, because part of what I've been doing recently, you know, before it was more traditional music journalism, interviewing artists and writing about music. I still do that, but I also help artists and primarily musicians articulate who they are and what they stand for in words and narrative and storytelling. And it is something that I think, for whatever reason, I'm able to tap into beyond even what they're putting forward publicly. Mm-hmm. There seems to be another level of connection there.
Which is like the Victoria's Secret, Victoria Principal story. Yeah, where she was, there's another level that they get out. So, and I think you and I being here today isn't just a coincidence. I mean, I think you had so many other people and you're in the music and, you know, I don't sing that well. I strum on guitar, you know, and we haven't been in touch for what, 20?
20 years, I think.
20 years?
Well, maybe we went to Rachel's wedding together. Okay. So maybe it's a little bit less than that.
But that's like but I mean, like we didn't have a connection or anything. And then, mm-hmm. you know, now that you're doing this, I think there is synchronicity, you know, that you reached out and were here doing this.
I was telling Darren, my producer, that I had an intuition to get in touch with you to do this. And I'm so glad that I followed it, because I know I had told you we were going to talk about following your dharma in your professional life, and we've gone off in so many different directions.
And we did. This is like me saying, hey, I'm doing a construction show. I have a feeling I need you to come and talk to me about construction. You know, and so, but it's being open to it. And I'm glad that we are. I'm glad that people can hear this, you know, and I'm glad that it's possible. It's, I have a question for you to consider. And it's, what is the difference between sound, color, and thought?
Oh, goodness. Do you have an answer in mind, or should I just consider on it?
You can call me next week. No, I'll tell you. It's the difference is very simple. It's frequency.
Oh.
Or modulation. And it's that simple. You can take its energy, it's the movement of energy at which rate it's oscillating. And you know, the frequency.
Right, of course, yes.
And so that's the only difference. Our body has receptors that can read certain bands of that frequency. You know, the eyes actually aren't seeing things. What the eyes are doing is they're reading, you know, when you read and when you see black, what it is just the energy is vibrating so slow or absorbing it that there's nothing there. And the white's fast. And yeah. So you can see it. And so your receptors in your eyes and your cones and rods are saying, I see this vibration level of a high vibration. And then it transmits it and tells your brain it's a color just so we can perceive it. And then your ear, which is the higher frequency, and your ears, you know, they're like, oh, I hear this sound. So it's a D note. It's the body's ability to read that. And then thought is the next level of vibration. And that's why it's moving much faster at the rate of sound. So the faster it modulates and the faster you can, that frequency range, that's where you can transmit it at a much higher speed. And it's easier. I mean, the fact that we transmit colors and sounds to TVs and we can have like, you know, 5K, you know, operating at light speed on your TV. We don't think twice about that every little pixel is being, you know, going all over the world. We transmitted that over the air somehow. But when you're thinking about thought, it's a much higher and you can transmit that faster and much more pure.
Gosh, but we have such a long way, I think, to be able to consciously tap into that.
I don't think we can. And I think there's a reason. And while there's been a lot of science that's been put behind trying to map out the frequency of thought, the governments have done it in the military trying to, because, you know, using it as a war, then they've gotten certain frequencies that they were able to determine cause chaos in the mind that they would drop, like during the Iraq war, they would actually drop something and it was making a frequency that would cause people to feel something. They've used it in marketing where they would try to put it in stores to see if certain frequencies would actually cause you to buy more. But here's the reason I believe that we've never been able to map thought, which is different than is because it's like encrypted like WhatsApp, and we change it and we're constantly changing the frequency. And so that's why, this is my belief, I'm not saying it's true, but I think that's why sometimes like we can connect when you're on that frequency. You both hit the same like encrypted channel and I can hear you and you can hear me. And then when I don't like you or you don't like me, I'm going to change my frequency now and you can't hear me anymore and I don't have to hear you. And so it's not a mappable thing. It's something that we're organically changing our frequencies and tuning like on a tuner, as opposed to it being like sound where you recreate a frequency. I don't know if you've ever seen that. And it's just interesting, like if you've ever seen that, those videos where they put iron filings like on the speaker and they have like a little piece of clear plastic and they'll play different frequencies and it makes these patterns.
Oh, yes. I have seen that.
You know, it's all so connected. And it's like, so it's those things are just magical. But I think once you get up to thought and it is a frequency and it is transmittable, we've never mapped it because we're looking for the obvious and it's not mappable.
I wonder, you know, if that is what is happening, it must happen on such a deep subconscious level that we would change the frequency or change the encryption. You know, I don't know, the brain is, and it might not be the brain, it could be the soul, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like the fact that you can tune your radio on an AM or FM dial and, you know, you tune it in, you tune it out. I don't want to hear your frequency today, now I do, right? Mm-hmm. I want to hear this radio station, so... The idea of changing your frequency is not that hard. And that's why it's never been a mappable thing. And I think that's why it's kind of something that's been hard for people. If they were actually ever to map it, thank God they haven't. Because I would hate to go to the store and I want to buy Pepsi now. I really want to buy Pepsi.
I know.
I mean, that would be a crazy world where if they could actually map and read your thought.
It's actually fairly terrifying.
Terrifying thing if we were able to be able to tap into that frequency. We've tapped into the ear. We know how to reproduce sound. We know how to reproduce color, you know, but not thought. And thank God. And I hope nobody picked it up and got it from this episode and went, aha, that's what I was missing, is the random factor.
And they'll figure out how to do it.
There's people smarter than
like
me.
Creating the nuclear bomb.
Yeah, no. I don't want to be,
No. But it's so funny. I'm looking at my notes and I had something about messaging and brand values and we've gone so far, so far beyond that. I was going to compliment you in that I feel like people just by interacting with you, can sense your values as a person and as a business person. And that is such a large, I think that goes a long way to explain why you've had so many wonderful clients and such an amazing career. Of course, you're still in the midst of it, not like...
Yes, it's still happening. Yeah, it hopes to get better.
But I feel like that you're such a great embodiment of that. And that's something I work with my clients on, is to help them identify their core brand values and then kind of not just look at it as words on paper, but embody it and live it through what, you know, the content that they put out, how they interact with their clients and their audience and that sort of thing. And I feel like you've done that just so well.
I feel like somebody like you would be a big benefit to talk to too, for me. You know, it's sometimes it's hard to look at yourself in the mirror and be honest with what you're seeing, right?
Yes.
It's hard to hear your own thoughts sometimes and know what is yours and what's fear and what's some message that somebody told you.
It's so true. And it's the hardest to do for yourself, even if you're, you know, someone who does branding and marketing and writing and storytelling for other people, or even bio writing for other people is one of the things I've done too. And just coming to write my own bio for my own website is one of the hardest
things. It is, right? It is hard.
Yeah. But for somebody else, I love it. And I find it actually quite easy most of the time. But for yourself, to have that objectivity and to see, you know, I think a lot of us are so self-critical and we don't think certain aspects of our story are relevant or interesting. And those almost always are some of the most interesting parts that we discount about ourselves. And you just need that other person to see, to recognize that.
It's something you love. And I'm going to tell you something that most people will think is bizarre, but your color of your aura has changed. It started out yellow. And then it went to green. As you were talking, that it was going purple. So
really, what does that mean? I wonder.
I don't know. You can look it up. But okay. Those are higher vibration colors.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, you just completely, like when they say somebody lights up, like you really do. People do light up, and we do see those things. So your entire vibe just raised, and it's something we all see. The aura is just above the level of frequency that the eyes can naturally see. But if you train your eyes, you can start to see a little wider frequency range and you see those things too.
Yes, that's amazing. I haven't actually seen much consciously in terms of auras, but I know people who are able to, and it's something that I think I can sense without actually seeing the colors some of the time, but it's fascinating.
You know, when you look at the way kids, you know, children, you ever see the way they color? They'll take a picture and they take a bunch of crayons and it's red and green and blue and they're like, woo, like all over around the head and the body, and they'll make all this crazy colors around them. And then what do? No, color inside the lines. That's wrong. You don't see any of those colors. We use flesh, honey. Flesh color. There. You don't see any of that. Huh? Okay. And, you know, that's the environment, and starting from New England, that we all grew up in, of not being allowed to see those things. But we see them. They're still there. Yeah. We just don't consciously, we've been consciously suppressing that.
I know. And I think a lot of, you know, the people who lived on this land long before we did, Native American cultures and other indigenous cultures, are so tapped into that intuition, and it's such a beautiful part of the culture. And it's something, like you said, it's been kind of finger wagged out of us.
Yeah, finger wagged out of it. I mean, yeah, when you looked, like I went to see these Mayan temple, it was really cool. And you see the hieroglyphics and the way that we used to the Indians. And they would display everything with energy around the body and the colors. And there was these rays that were coming out because back to them, that was something that we see. That was normal, right?
Yeah. Oh, I think a lot of wisdom, they say, is about relearning things. Like if you believe in, especially if you believe in maybe past lives or... just kind of the universal force, not to get too out there, but that a lot of...
But why is that out there?
I, Yeah, I guess it's my training.
I mean, I'm sorry, if George Lucas can do it with the Force, we can do it.
Right, right.
He had some guts.
You're right, and it's societal conditioning to think, oh, if I speak about this openly, people will think I'm crazy. And yeah, that's a big part of it. And so that it's a wisdom that is already there for us. We just kind of need to be reminded of it, you know, through certain experiences we have in life or teachings that we are exposed to. And it's, you know, things that sometimes resonate the most are things that on a certain level you feel they're so familiar, but you don't know why.
Yes. And it's also about being with the right people that, you know, bring it out versus people that will pull it back.
True.
There was somebody that I met, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago or so. That doesn't matter. But they came to they had Begley show, that we did the big opening, and they were there, and I was looking at this person and I could hear every thought that she had. And sometimes it happens for me. I almost felt guilty. Like, I can hear what she's thinking. You know, I felt like a peeping Tom.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't always happen, but just, you know, sometimes someone's like that. And then she turned over to me and she said, you can hear me, can't you? But I put back my costume again at that moment. And I just like, when I'm like, hear you, what did you say? You know, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, you're one of us. And I'm like, what's in your drink? What did they put in there?
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
And it's interesting how quickly I just clammed up and went back to putting on my, you know, costume of this isn't real. And she kept pushing, you're part of our tribe. You're one of us. And, you know. And I'm like, don't, note to self, don't invite her to any more of your events. Okay. And then she said, you've been listening to my thoughts. And then it was like, I felt naked all of a sudden. Of like, you know, not literally, but figuratively, and that somebody could see through me. She goes, I heard you listening to my thoughts. You hear it. And she said, that's what I mean. You're one of us. And there's very few of us, and we find one another. And when we do, we know it. And we're within that tribe. And so we have to raise our hand and say hello to that person when you find that.
And were you able to take that on board? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh boy, I'm going to use the bathroom right now. You know, I was like, I don't really know how to deal with this. Yeah. But because I just felt like it was something that I was dealing with. You know, it was my thing that I keep a secret. And to have that happen, it made me start raising my hand and like, I think you're in my tribe. Yeah, I'm in yours. And so I started meeting a lot of people that way, that were similar to me or people I already knew and like started opening the conversations like we are right here.
Wow, Scott, that's wonderful. And I know that this is a little different, example of what we're talking about, but I traveled to Nepal a few years ago for work, and I had never been to Asia before, and it felt so familiar. And I can't explain it. There was a tingling in my body. I felt like I was at home, and there was no logical explanation for that. And it kind of played out over the weeks that I was there. Other things kept happening. It was like, why do I feel like I've been here before? Because it, you know, on a more physical level, it was one of the most foreign and different places I had ever visited. But there was just like a soul knowing that it felt like home in a weird way. And then I met a woman a few years later, a friend of a friend who did like past life readings and things like that. And she told me, unsolicited, that I was in a past life a member of the Himalayan Hill Tribe people. And of course, that would be
in Nepal.
Uh-huh. And I just, again, got the goosebumps and tingles all over. And I was like, oh my gosh, that feels right to me. And I don't even know exactly how I feel about the idea of past lives, but something in me... on a less analytical level was like, it really resonated. It's pretty amazing.
I had a very similar experience. I went to Venice, Italy. And I had the tingles. I'm like, I felt like I was home. I had to do my DNA test after. Like, I think I'm Italian. I think I'm home. This is really weird. There's no Italian in me. But it's similar in that sense, and that you shared that story. And I think that, you know, our New England or our New World or New America, we've come from there. Our, you know, our heritage didn't start here where we live. And I think those countries is... It clicks into our home. I mean, that is the origins of where our humanity started. We just kind of started to spread out. So, you know, it could be one of your ancestors was actually there, and it could be in some part. I mean, I'm with you on the past life things. I'm not sure if I'm kind of on the fence on that, but, you know, past lives could be past lives of people that are connected to you as well. That, you know, too, where you came from, and people that, and I was going to share what that tingly goosebump feeling is. It's real. It happens and you can see it. And it's when your vibration either goes up really quickly or drops down, and you say you get chills. So when your body starts to vibrate faster in a very short amount of time, your nerves like get a little like, woo, what's that? Oh my God. You know, it's like a tickle. And so then it just happens so quickly that your body can't adjust and your nerves don't know what to do. So they short out and you get the little tingle thing and your hairs rise and everything just goes, oh my God. So if you ever feel the tingles or you feel the goosebumps, that's your vibration just went up from there.
Yeah, Scott. And that's, I had that at a Patti Smith concert the other night. Back to music, being at live music shows gives that to me more consistently than anything else.
Yeah, so just totally know sense. That you just survive whatever you're doing, yeah. Your vibration lifted. Mm-hmm. And then also when you get that feeling of the chill, like, ooh, I don't know what that is. It's also, you know, it's the dropping of it too, going up or down. And so if you feel that, it's something that lowered your vibration.
Right. Oh boy, we've gotten very, very metaphysical, and I know, Scott, that I feel like I could talk to you for two more hours, but I know you got things going on tonight, so I don't want to take, you know, too much longer to land the plane, but maybe you'll come back and have a part two with me.
I would love that.
That would be really fun. And in terms of finding you, how can people get a hold of you if they might want to work with you? Or
they just go like this. Think about me and I will be there. I'm like Santa Claus. No. My email, name of the company is Building Construction Group. And if anybody looks up Scott Harris or Scott Hamilton Harris Building or Builder, there's a lot of stuff that comes up. So I can be found that way too. And my email address is scott@buildingcgroup.com.
Building the letter C as in cat.
C as in construction. Yeah. Exactly. So. But I think the easiest way to find me is, as I think people do it on Instagram, you know, Scott_Harris_Builder and building. But if somehow nobody can ever remember, but they Google me, they find me. And even when they're Googling somebody else, they still find me.
As it
was meant to be, the real Scott Harris. So, yeah.
Oh, Scott, thank you so much.
Thank
so
you wonderful. For having me on. I think this was meant to happen, and I'm glad it did.
Me too. Thanks so much for tuning in to Stories in Harmony. I'd be so grateful if you could like, subscribe, and rate our show, as it helps others find it too. In addition to creating a platform for people from all walks of life to share their stories, I help artists and entrepreneurs most powerfully share their brand stories to grow their businesses and magnetize their ideal audience. I also help with copywriting, narrative development, marketing emails, and a whole lot more. If you'd like to find out more about what I do or get in touch, visit my website at lauraferrero.co. A huge thank you to producer Darren Kim, who produces Stories in Harmony, and to James Breeman for creating the theme music. Thanks again for being here. We'll see you next time.